There we go. Good morning. It is really great to be here with you. I brought with me my wife, Marcia. Yeah. A little fun fact, she is Don Rowe's sister. So, pray for her. No, we love Don and Marcy, especially Marcy. And love Don too. He is the older brother I did not have growing up, so I do appreciate Don a great deal. Also, we brought one of our young men from Lincoln. Max is sitting in the back. He's checking out to see how it is from the back, and Marcia's sitting in the front, and they'll give me like a critique on the way back to Lincoln today. But I have known about Kingsway before there was a Kingsway. I was on the NCEA board that was involved with the area churches, I think primarily Calvary, as I recall. It's been a few years ago, but I remember in 1986, this congregation came into existence, and I have watched with interest in the area. Marcia and I have lived in this area, the Omaha Council Bluffs Lincoln area, since 1979. So we've watched how this church go through transition before, and I want you to know I am privileged. And Marcia feels the same way, I'm sure, to be among you. Some of you we already know very well because of prior connections, and we look forward, however long this interim time may be, to being your pastor and encourager while we can do so. This morning I want to talk about change. I know that that is everybody's favorite topic to talk about. That is our favorite. I recently, are you guys acquainted with the, what's it called, Max? It's the nine different. Yeah, Enneagram. You guys done the Enneagram? I found out doing the Enneagram that I am not particularly excited about change when it happens. I didn't need to take any kind of a test like that to know that. And if I ever had any doubt, my wife would let me know for sure. I'm not a fan of change, but I do recognize that change is inevitable. Whenever things change, of course, they change, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit this morning. Now, how much change are we talking about? I know some of you are like me. At the very outset, you go, well, okay, I know intellectually change has to happen. I mean, after all, Raleigh's not here anymore. Suzette, they're no longer in the role that they had here at Kingsway Christian Church. I know just intellectually things are going to change, but how much change are we talking about here, after all? And the wonderful thing about me as the interim is I have absolutely no idea how much change there will be. But I know life has taught me this, that change is inevitable. And we want to embrace it in a healthy sort of way, and we want to come alongside and be encouragers as we can. Marcia and I live in Lincoln. We will be commuting. We may have the longest commute of anybody here. So I'm just going to tell you, on a bad weather Sunday, if I'm here, I'm going to expect you all to be here too. All right? You know, we haven't even talked about that. What if the preacher can't come? I guess Perry better have a sermon ready just in case. Or maybe Matt. I don't know. Maybe see. I don't know. But ready to go just in case. This morning, if you have your with me to Luke chapter 2, a story that I love. In fact, I think I'm going to preach about it this week, and I may preach about it again next week. We'll see how it goes. Not the same sermon, of course, but the same text. Luke chapter 2, beginning with verse 41. Every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to the custom. And after the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. And then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. And when they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting around the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. And then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. In my own life, I have discovered, perhaps you have too, that there are three distinct aspects, phases, stages, however we want to term it, that we must go through during a time of transition, a time of change. This is what we see, I think, personified in the story that I've read for us this morning, what transpired in the life of Joseph and Mary and Jesus in this episode that took place in the temple long ago. If you're a note taker, here are the notes, all right? I didn't even have enough for an outline today. But I do have some things that I'd like for you to jot down if you're a note taker. If you're not a note taker, it's okay. It really is. First of all, there's a shock. The shock that comes when change is in our midst. What I'm talking about is the surprise to our equilibrium, physically, emotionally, relationally. Our sense of well-being, our balance is disrupted by some event or some events. Like, for example, the resignation of a minister. That's just one example of what we're talking about. There is the shock of that which happens, which, depending on our relational proximity to the person who has resigned, the people who are leaving, Raleigh and Suzette, my guess is, based on my own personal experience, that the closer you are relationally to them, the more their announcement has impacted you emotionally. It may have come to you as a shock. It may have been something that you were aware was a possibility that was going to happen. But when the news was announced, when the reality broke in, there was this sense of things are not the way they used to be. And that leads us to the second phase or stage or aspect of change. And that is the struggle that we inevitably find ourselves in as we search for a return to normal. Once things are disrupted, we want things back the way they were, just as quickly as they can be that way. Or if they can't be exactly the way they were, as nearly as they can be, back to the way they were. I illustrate this by simply saying, I talked with one of the members of the church this week. I did not secure his permission in sharing his quote, so I will not divulge his identity to you this morning. But we had a great conversation, and we talked a little bit about the preacher search, and he says, what we really want is somebody just like Raleigh, you know? And I'm thinking, well, I'm sure not the guy, for sure. And which, by the way, I am not the guy. Interim means interim. It means I'm here filling in until the new guy comes. But I thought that's a natural tendency. We want things to be, if we like things the way they are, we want things to remain the way they are. And so it's a struggle for us to try to get things back. We search for that. However, it is a vain search that we find ourselves in because we cannot undo what's already been done. We can't go back to the way it was before, and things inevitably have to change. And so that brings us to the third phase or stage or aspect of change, and that is the resulting stability that is experienced when acceptance comes, when we say, okay, this is the new normal. This is what it's going to be like. Now, And my guess is, as it comes to going through this interim time and eventually finding a new pastor, that when you settle into that new season, there will be things that you like better about that season than you have in the past. I also suspect that there will be some things that you have some questions about. You'll wonder, I don't know if I like that as much as I liked the way it was before. And that's entirely to be understood, and it's entirely okay. Two things we tend to minimize, I fear, when it comes to the process of change. First of all, I would say it is the depth of the shock that is to be experienced. I think we tend to, many of us anyway, tend to minimize it. We say, it's not really that big a deal. I mean, after all, it's just Raleigh and Suzette. And I don't mean that in a disparaging sort of way at all. I've known Raleigh since 1980. I met him when he was a student at Bible College. I've had a long friendship with Raleigh. Haven't known Suzette nearly as long or nearly as well, but I have great respect for them. But, you know, it might be tempting in a congregation this size to say, well, it's only two people, but it's two people that we all have looked to for leadership. And so we dare not minimize the depth of the shock, the surprise, of sorrow that some of us may feel. Some of you may be thinking, well, last Sunday was his last Sunday, and nobody shed any tears, at least not that I noticed, and, you know, it's a new year, it's a new day. Let's give it a little bit of time. In fact, that's what the interim time is for, is to give us an opportunity as a congregation, as God's people, to breathe a little bit, to experience all those things that are going on inside, the sense of excitement about what God's going to do in the days ahead, as well as the sense of loss that somebody who's been very important to the life of this congregation for the last 8 years is no longer going to be present as they were and influencing like they did. So let's be careful about minimizing the depth of the shock. The second thing that I would warn us about, I would just encourage us to think about, is to not minimize the length of time, the duration of the struggle. And when I use the word struggle, I'm using it in the sense of as we're trying to find our way, regain our footing, get a sense of where the future is going. Let us not get in too big of a hurry to find that take place. In fact, the interim time is a wonderful time for all of us individually and collectively as a congregation to take a look inside, to evaluate motives, to think about how we're doing things, to begin to prepare in our hearts a mindset that is ready for what God has for us in the future. You see, whatever the context, whether it's our lives individually, our marriages, our families, this church, the schools where our children attend, the work that we do day by day, here's the thing. In every single one of these arenas, when change comes, change comes. If you're like me, you may try to choose the measure of change you want. You may try to negotiate with the future and say, I'm willing to go this far, but only this far. It may be that we think we can control some aspects of this time of transition, but the truth of the matter is that much of change, when it happens in life, cannot be chosen. It cannot be controlled in any significant way. And if you're a control freak like me, that drives you absolutely nuts. I don't know, I may be the only one here who struggles with that, but when change comes, we need to remember that change is coming. What we can control is this: how we choose to respond can make all the difference in the world when it comes to navigating our way through congregational change. What a time it is for us to speak encouragement to one another, to love one another, to forgive one another, to, if we wrong one another, to be quick to make things right with one another. You know, one of the most significant transitions in our life for Marcia and me took place a little over 5 years ago. I was a pastor at Capital City Christian Church in Lincoln for over 30 years. Marcia and I loved the church. We still do. I was 25 years old when I came to that church. I like to say I grew up at that church, or that church raised me in the Lord to become whatever it is that I'm able to offer for the Lord today. I cannot exaggerate what a significant influence that group of God's people have had on my own spiritual journey as a believer. But there came a point in time where I knew the time had come for me. I imagine Raleigh and Suzette went through something very similar when they made their decision to leave. And I knew it was time to make a change. And so now I teach at Nebraska Christian College. We help our son Mark with his work in downtown Lincoln and in Haiti. That in and of itself, as that might sound like a significant change, that really wasn't the significant change I want to talk to you about. What was really significant was when we decided to leave our middle-class suburb that we had lived in for over 30 years in Northeast Lincoln. It felt safe, it felt familiar, and we decided if we were going to join our son Mark in his work in downtown Lincoln that we needed to move to downtown Lincoln in a neighborhood that's characterized by a high crime rate, ethnic diversity, mobility in terms of who lives there because over 80% of the properties are rentals, and a high level of poverty. The local schools there, over 90% of the students are qualified for free or reduced lunch. I mean, we're talking about a difficult place in which to live. And, you know, we did that on our own. We chose to do this. And, you know, some of the change that we anticipated for sure has come, but there's been a whole lot of change that we had no way of knowing until we actually got there and found out what it's going to be. Of course, there's those changes that we choose for ourselves. And, you know, we might, if somebody says, well, I chose to do this, and it turns out surprising for them, there's part of us, especially in those of us who are resistant to change ourselves and who might be tempted to say, well, you chose that. You know, you chose it. You have to deal with that. That's true. But there's also that kind of change that we do not choose for ourselves. You know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. Maybe you've had this happen in your family, as we have in our family. We have four kids. We love all four of our kids. All four of our kids have chosen to follow Jesus, but right now, one of them is, I would say he's not following Jesus, given the kind of life that he is living. And, you know, nothing's ever going to change the love that I have for him, father for a son. But I tell you, there are times when his mother and I are grieved at some of the choices that he makes in life. There are times when we look at each other and say, we did not sign up for this. We are too old to be dealing with this kind of nonsense. And then in the next breath we say, but you know what? We are his parents. And parents never, ever give up. I guess I say that just to let you know that the new guy up front is not squeaky clean. He's not pure and white. I am a flawed man. I have an imperfect family. My guess is during our interim time here, it's probably a good thing it's going to be short because I do make mistakes. But you know, I found also that in that willingness to be open and transparent, what Marcia and I have discovered is that the body of Christ has the capacity, and more than that, the willingness to come alongside and help us when we're navigating that kind of change as well. So this morning, let's get to the Bible text. You wonder, when is he going to get to the Bible? I am here now, all right, in case you were wondering that. I love this story in Luke chapter 2. I hope you do too. I hope you were acquainted with it before we read it, but in case you weren't, this took place when the boy Jesus was 12 years old. Any of you have 12-year-old boys in your life? I raised four 12-year-olds, and now we're in the grandparenting season. We have a 12-year-old grandson right now. You know, he is adorable and annoying all at the same time, you know? I love our grandson, Micah, of course, but make no mistake about it, it's a good thing that he captured our hearts when he was a baby and a toddler, because we're entering into that adolescent season of life where, wow, if we didn't have all the history beforehand, I don't know if we'd make it. This is Jesus at this time of his life. In order to prepare Jesus for his transition to Jewish manhood at the age of 13 the following year, Joseph and Mary, as was their annual tradition, brought their son Jesus to Jerusalem, celebrate the Feast of the Passover, which, as we know as Christians, we study the Old Testament, we know that was a feast, a celebration of great national and spiritual significance for them as God's people. Where the story gets interesting, where they make this shocking discovery that somehow they have lost the Son of God. How does anybody do that? Actually, I don't know. Track of a child. No, the panic deep within. Even if it's just momentarily, that must have been there in Joseph and Mary for 3 days. For 3 days. 72 hours. Let that sink in. They were separated from him. I mean, after all, who would have thought to look for a 12-year-old middle school-age boy in a sanctuary talking with a bunch of old preachers? I mean, go figure. But that's where they found him. And when they found him, when they asked him, his mother asked about his whereabouts and why he had done what he had done. Can you imagine, first of all, Joseph? That every single one of us who may have happened to have been or are currently adoptive or step or foster parents, hearing those words that you know are inevitable, oh yeah, well you're not my real dad. I don't have to listen to you anyway. Now I know Jesus was a lot more diplomatic, or at least the Bible makes him sound more diplomatic, but the impact for Joseph had to be the same anyway. I mean, Joseph knew the identity of his son. I mean, he knew that Jesus was the Son of God. But you know, there's a difference between knowing and knowing, right? Like the difference between before you get married and you say to the person that you're getting married to, oh, I know, it's going to be different after we get married. It's going to be wonderful after we get married. And it is. We may not realize, or we never get married, that it also has the potential of being awful after we get married as well. But we all know there's a difference between knowing and knowing. Or folks before they are blessed with children, how wise they are, how knowledgeable they are about how children ought to be raised. And then God entrusts them with children, and they find out that they're fighting for their lives, wondering, how are we going to be able to raise these children that God has entrusted to us? And the same thing is true of a pastoral search. We know it's going to be different. But I think in the next few months and years, eventually, we'll find out that we will really know how different things will become. And how about Mary? We talked about Joseph. How about Mary? Do you notice there how truthfully direct Jesus was when he responded to her question? And there are other times recorded for us in the Gospels where, to our Western ears, he sounds almost rude the way he talks to her. The thing is, like Joseph, Mary had to be confronted with the reality, the significance of Jesus' identity. Yes, she knew, she agreed to bear God's son. But I wonder, in those 30 years of mother-son relationship prior to the beginning of his public ministry, Was she ever tempted to think that the pronouncements of the angels, the words that she had heard from the lips of Simeon and Anna at the temple, that maybe somehow, some way, those were not going to be fulfilled? That maybe somehow or another she could keep this gift from God somehow to herself? I mean, you read the Bible, there's no indication whatsoever that she ever had even a doubt. But I tell you, I can't help but wonder, though, if there weren't moments when she wondered about the change that was on the horizon. I wonder because, as I said earlier, I want to avoid change at all costs. I want to negotiate with the future and try to minimize the change that I'm comfortable with. When we think about Mary, imagine how difficult it must have been for her to share her child with us, to be present on that day when he suffered and died for us. Over the course of time, Joseph and Mary had to come to the realization that their son, this young man in process growing up before their very eyes, was really God's son. From the shock in our story of learning that he was missing, the struggle that they went through of wondering what had become of him, where had he gone, had somebody taken him, frantically searching, to the eventual stability that they came to when they were reunited with him, I think we see in their story what happens to all of us when our stories are suddenly disrupted by change. And let me tell you, things would never, ever be the same again in that home. Yes, Jesus went with them to Nazareth. Yes, he was obedient to them. But I have to believe that from then on, Mary and Joseph looked at Jesus through different eyes, being reminded as they were by his own words what a powerful mission the Son of God had been sent on earth to do. So, wherever you are today, wherever I am today, on this continuum of change, all of us are on it. We're either in a moment where we've experienced that initial shock. We've had something disrupt our lives, something that upsetting that has happened. Or maybe it's the resulting struggle. Maybe you are beginning to process what has happened, but you're trying to figure out what is this going to mean for me, my marriage, our family, my work, the future. Or maybe you've finally, possibly found that fragile stability that signals that maybe, just maybe, things are going to be okay. Wherever we are, we can know this. The good news for all of us is the realization that the God who came near 2,000 years ago in the incarnation of Jesus, what we've just celebrated during this Advent and Christmas season, that this God is present in our world, right here, right now. He's ready to minister to us in our circumstances, whatever they might be. For you see, for Joseph and Mary, it never really was about Jesus being lost. Rather, it was simply a matter of their finding him. And as we navigate through the changes that are taking place in our lives and our life together as a congregation, I want to have each of us leave here with this knowledge that the God who created all of us, the God who loves all of us, the God who has saved us through his son Jesus, get this, he has not forgotten where any of us live. He knows the address of this church. He has not and he will never lose track of us, regardless of the change that we are seeking to navigate in our lives of faith. For he has said in Hebrews 13, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. Preachers come and go. Mercifully so sometimes. But God says that he is our helper and we need not be afraid. James reminds us in these words, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. And the Apostle Peter reminds us that we can cast our anxiety, our cares on the Lord because he cares for us. And so we're going to move into a time of invitation right now. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up, and I'm going to talk just a little bit while they do that. Two words I want us to think about as we wrap up today. The words submission and surrender. Submission to God's plans for us and surrender to the Lord of all, I think is what.